And that's where we have this multiple crimes. The other thing, and again, to mention mental health, 14% overall of the males, 50% of the women. Unless we manage that carefully, they come out of my system with 30 days of psychotropics and $100, and they go someplace. And if they use the psychotropics for 30 days, we're lucky. They often will sell them or lose them right away. The mentally ill are highly likely to recidivate extremely quickly unless we do something to prepare them to return. That in and of itself, if we just make a dent in that effort, I am working with DCF, for example, do a handoff so that they meet us, so we actually get them to their first appointment. But those are very critical, little factors, but very critical in the crime rate in the state of Florida.
Sandy, you got a question?
I had a comment, first of all. Jim, I've listened to secretaries of correction for many, many years, and this is the first time I ever had a good feeling about a presentation. This was just excellent, and you're doing some really important thinking here and looking at the things that ought to be important to people of Florida, so I wanted to congratulate you. A question. We've talked in other contexts about comparing ourselves with other states. My memory is that when Alex de Tocqueville came to the United States, he came to study the prison system in the United States. He went to a number of states. If de Tocqueville today were looking for a state to come to study, where would he go?
I'd like to say Florida. I'm not sure. The only reason I'm not sure is because I've been too introspective. Remember, I'm not of this field. And my first year, I was borrowed into my own department in my own state. However, I have reached out to a foundation called the JET Foundation, and I've asked them to link me up with the more progressive states. And I have a meeting in New York State, not that it's a progressive state, that's the location of the meeting, in a month. And I'm going to meet, I don't know who he's inviting, but I'm going to meet some of my counterparts who at least this foundation, which I think you may know.
I do know. Mm-hmm.
I think I'm going to hear some of the ideas. So I think Ohio's up there. I've heard Ohio mentioned. And after that, I don't know.
Okay. It'll be interesting to find out.
Any other questions?
Mr. Chairman, I have a question. Yes. I hope this doesn't come across as being disrespectful. But the 10% cut that was pretty much mandated, or this, what you're proposing, appears by any reasonable person's thinking to be a very good public policy. Would you have gotten there without the mandate?
I can answer that on many levels. Would I have been so bold as to propose out a mandate? Probably not. Would I have taken the time to think my way through it? I'm sorry to say, probably not. So it was an incentive for me to get thinking. I didn't do it by myself. I had good people. But the guiding principles were mine. And where I was adamant, and of course I'll have to follow instructions when I get them, I held sacred the education, the vocational training, and the substance abuse treatment. I think that would be a disaster to cut that. It's the most obvious target, and I think it will reverberate and multiplication of crime in our state.
Your candor's great. You hear so many others say, in my area, I just can't do it. But yet I doubt anyone has numbers that are as ever-increasing as yours, and yet you find the room to do it. And as Sandy says, pretty refreshing.
Jim, what are you going to provide empirically to justify this stuff?
On substance abuse treatment, solid base. On education, solid base.
On the three proposals, on the integration back into society, what is the empirical data that you're going to use to support your
proposals 1 and 2, which are my strongest ones, is the fact that we've had no problem, no historical problem, with those in the work free release center.
So those would not be considered experimental?
No. No. What would be the new area, which is just manifests itself in recent years, is the year and a day group. But I would encourage you to talk to those local officials that you meet with. I believe the only reason they're giving them a year and a day is a cost save. That otherwise they would keep them in the local hoosegow for a few months, a few weeks, and they'd be out. They'd do some work effort and they'd be out. But they're busting their budgets. So give them 366 days. It really equates to me to 120 to 150 days. Four or five months. And then I get them and I scratch my head. By the time I get them in processed, because I got to go through their health, I got to inspect them, give them physicals, in process them. By the time I'm in processing them, I'm out processing them. But that absorbs space. So I think I'm on pretty solid ground on this one.
Jim, let me just switch topics on the health care cost issues. Now, these are health care costs of these are captive health care costs. Obviously, you're supplying them yourself internally to the prison system.
Yeah.
So these would include the salary of the personnel and the cost of medication. Is that mostly it?
Yes.
Okay. None of this stuff is, you know, being supplied by a third party.
Well, no, it is. In fact, medication is huge cost. That my personnel staff huge. But if I have inmates hurt themselves all the times, a lot of them for mental illness reasons. They do grotesque things. When that happens, they get beyond the capacity of my system. So I have contractual relationships with hospitals, and very expensive. I will life-flight somebody out. When I life-flight somebody out, right away I lose control. In fact, if I call 911, I lose control. And we do call 911. So off the inmate goes, I pay for the helicopter, which means you pay for the helicopter. He gets in the hospital. I'm trying to figure out what his costs are in the hospital. I've got thousands of these. By the time I realize some guy's been sort of loitering in a hospital bed well beyond his need and get him back, I've spent tens of thousands of dollars. I've got to do a better job of managing this. But these are enormous costs I'm talking about.
All right, so there are basically three components, the outside costs, the third-party provider costs, let's call it that,
yes.
the medication, and then the staff.
Staff.
Okay. And what is the what has been the growth percentage-wise of those components in the last couple of years, if you know offhand?
I can't give you hard data. There has been a growth. I'll give you this one. This may be helpful. I had a health service provider had a contract with the department. They won a little bit. And they won a little bit just before I came to the department. When they won a little bit, the legislator a little suspicious. And they called their CEO before the body and said, can you really do that? And the answer was, absolutely. Absolutely. So they won the contract. 6 months after I got there, the same CEO showed up and said, we can't make costs. We're $12 million short after 6 months. This guy was running a quarter of the state's medical. And his appeal was, please plus up my contract, $12 million, or I'll not be able to perform. I could not do that. He gave me an extraction notice. He had 90 days, and I replaced him with actually a polyglot of health service providers. But that's interesting. It's one provider for one quarter of the state in a few months running a $12 million cost overrun on a budget that was running something like $80 million for that year. You saw my medical cost this year, $367 million. I would anticipate at least a 10% growth rate on that as prices go up. Now, let me be clear, though. I am now currently trying to cleanse my utilization management system. I believe I have serious internal problems. I think I'm wasting tens of millions of dollars a year, and I need to get it under control.
Sandy?
I'd like to go back to faith-based prisons. I was extremely skeptical about that when it was proposed. I've now visited briefly at Wakulla, which I guess is one of your partially.
It is.
And came away a bit impressed with what was going on When do you think you'll have enough data to know whether that's working? And I assume that the data you're looking for is after people are released, what kind of recidivism do you get?
We're actually allocated a five-year run from the inception.
Uh-huh.
So you back up a couple of years, we've got about 3 years to go. Now, some have taken partial slices, and I think you can do that. Allison DeFore, for example, is a very big supporter, but he ran some data the other day in a letter that was very impressive. He was talking about a recidivism rate of about 8%. Now, I've not had a chance to scrutinize his data, and it's got to be short-term. But he is very, and he's not, you know, he's not a slouch. He's a very objective, rational, scientific-based guy.
Former sheriff.
Former sheriff of Monroe County. So he believes it works. Intuitively, you believe it would work. The other side of that, a lot of people, though, manipulate the system. And we do have a lot of inmates that are in faith-based, which I don't believe their faith is that profound. They've been able to work their way in there.
Yeah.
It's an easier life.
So that's part of my skepticism, but if that proves out on recidivism rate, I'm willing to accept that.
You're willing to have faith in it.
Yeah.
But there's an argument. That doesn't matter what your motives are for getting rid of it.
Martha,
I was, one of the figures you gave me, it was startling to me, that we build one or two new prisons a year.
That's right.
Which means that the overall prison population is increasing that much every year. It means the stable prison population.
That's right, it is.
Does that mean people are not getting out, or is it a combination of not getting out, more crime?
Again, it's those two streams. One is the expanding population state of Florida. We've gone through immense growth. We're over 17 million now, and I came here just a few years ago. We were at 14 million. We keep going up like that. So I think the figure is 4-point-something% of the population you can forecast is going to get into a prison. So that's the larger stream. The other group is those that come in and then get out and come back. I would argue that there's probably not what you can do about the expansion from the population growth. I do believe there's something you can do about those returning. That probably steeped in the idea that most people learn as they go. And if you ended up in prison the first time, you really don't want to end up there again. But given no other options, you'll take your chances and you might end up there.
I would like to know the demographics of the prison population. I mean, you made the comment that the women are the fastest growing cohort, but I'd like to know what the demographics are by age, gender, race.
I can give you some rough right now, if that's what you'd like. It's who commits crimes the most? It's young men. Young men commit crimes. And so we have a large population of young men from 21 to 35. Very violent, very volatile. They commit a lot of crimes. Ethnically, we are running about 37% African-American, about, I think it's 13-14% Hispanic, the rest white, very few Asian background. Women, we're running about 7,700 women now out of a population of 92,000. Having said that, we run the full gamut. I have youthful offenders.
Say that again. You have 7,700 of 90?
Of
92,000.
Out of 92,000. It's actually 93,000. We just went over 93. So you can see it's a small percent, but it's the fastest growing. I have, 70-some inmates with Alzheimer's, and that's something I have to manage, by the way. And I have a number of youthful offenders. These are 21 and under, and I have to segregate them. By the way, these are a very ill-behaved group, very volatile. They take a lot of management. And I have to protect them from the older inmates. But that's rough. I can give you a whole brochure on this, all of you, that breaks us down very finely.
Please do, Jim. Give it to the staff.
I will.
Thank you. Any other questions for the commissioner?
Yeah, great job.
Yeah, he's terrific. He's done a wonderful job in the last couple of years. What he hasn't mentioned is that he kind of alluded to it, that his first initial experience with the department was not your typical experience in running a correctional department. He had to clean it out, get some bad apples there, and he's turned it around, and it was a huge undertaking. Yes, Martha.
If you were king for a day, what do you think a commission like this, which is charged with looking forward 20 years and anticipating the need, governmental services need and the funding, what would be your recommendation to us?
In the area of criminal justice and the supervision we're talking about, make some cost-effective investments in lowering the return rate, which means education, substance abuse treatment, vocational training, life management. Anticipate growth, but it does not have to be at the rate we're currently seeing.
Jim, thank you very much. If you could stick around, I'm sure that if you have the time, I'm sure the commissioners would like to talk to you a little bit. And Emery, if you can come up now, just for a few minutes here. Commissioners, this is Emery Ganey, and Emery is the Director of Law Enforcement Relations. He's with the Office of the Attorney General. And he approached me during the break, and he wanted to address us to talk about a topic that came up during the presentation by the Chiefs of Police.
Mr. Chair, Commissioners, Emery Ganey, as the Chair mentioned, with the Office of Attorney General. Let me first tell you a little bit about my background to sort of qualify a couple of comments. I spent 25 years before I retired from the Alachua County Sheriff's Office, so I have 25 years of service, starting as a young patrol deputy, actually investigating crimes many years ago and serving in various positions up to chief deputy before I left that organization as the second in command. So I have a lot of time on both the operational and administrative side, and one of those assignments was running our HR, our personnel bureau, during the course of that time. And Mr. Chair, if I may take about 40 seconds to make two quick comments on something the Secretary said, and then I'll address the specific issue about retirement. And that's to reiterate, having come from a sheriff's office who had a jail, I can tell you that I, too, saw that increase in the female population and that increased medical care, that when we sit there and we start looking at it, for whatever reason, there seems to be a higher level of medical care. We ran a facility that was designed for 782 inmates, constantly ran 1,000 to 1,100. Still doing that today, even after I leave. And we are seeing that increase in care, Commissioner. And, of course, we have those chronic patients as well on dialysis and other chronic illnesses that local communities or the Secretary, in his case, have to also address those medical care issues. And it really drives medical costs out of the ceiling, both on the local level as well as the state level. And, of course, the Secretary gets his clientele from local jails. Method and that system continues in both over there. And we're talking about recidivism rate, Commissioner, was talking about that real briefly. And that potential 36,000 that the Secretary talked about, not only do they get out and commit more crimes, you have a local jurisdiction, could be a sheriff, could be a police chiefs, who have spent investigated crimes trying to recapture these inmates or charged with these new crimes. Oftentimes, believe it or not, they don't show up for court. So your warrants departments, and in the state of Florida, all warrants are the responsibility of your sheriff of that county by law. So even though a police agency may initiate it, if a warrant's issued, it comes to the sheriff of that county to serve and deliver that individual. Then you have all the investigated time of a sheriff warrants investigated, because likewise they don't want to be found. So quite a bit of time and investigated costs with electronic systems, stakeouts of their residences or their workplaces and that sort that's also involved. And, of course, they return to local jails, where likewise, as the Secretary pointed out, they may sit 5 or 6 months before they go through the entire process to be prosecuted. So there's astronomical costs that's associated with these individuals, unfortunately, back and forth. And thank you, Mr. Chair, for letting me make those two extra comments. What we want to comment on real briefly, the gentleman from the city of Orlando, Mark, was talking about retirement in the 20 years. Let me first say, and that's my background as an ex-human resource administrator comes in, your state employees, as well as most of your sheriff's offices, because out of the 67, all but one, and Duval, because they are a consolidated government, operate off state retirement. There are several classes of retirement there. A typical, what we call non-high-risk and non-sworn employee, works 30 years. There is an age requirement of 55 that's in there. They're within those classifications for the high-risk services, law enforcement, corrections, firefighters, some state attorney investigators, and a couple of more, come up under what's called a special risk category where they can retire after 25 years of service, not 25 years of service, and they're on the state retirement. So it's a little different. I think the Mark may have sort of alluded and made some of you think that everybody got the 20-year deal, and that's just not the case. If you leave state retirement, you can come back after a period of time into any of those positions we just talked about, but you cannot come back in a high-risk category. You didn't come back at the lower-risk salary, so there is some savings there. So I just want to make sure that the commission understand when we talk about law enforcement officers retiring, there are differences. Most of those 20-year and out are local governments, local municipalities, I should say, and they differ around the state. I've done some research on those. Some are 20, some are 25, some are 22. They do vary, but that's simply a decision of the municipality as to how to handle that. Mr. Chair, thank you.
I appreciate that. Any questions? All right. Thank you very much, Emory. Thanks for doing that. Well, members, thank you very much for attending today. It was a very informative meeting. Let me just tell you when our next meeting is going to be. That was September 10th at the Tampa International Airport, a similar room to this one. And we'll get more specific instructions and directions from Susan. A couple of things I heard coming out of this meeting.
Is that a 9-3 meeting, Mr. Chairman?
That is, yes. Yes, it is. I think you all wanted to hear more in the area of public safety and law enforcement about the overall funding, Martha, and different components of the pie, where it comes from and where it goes. And we did not present anyone today to talk about the courts, the prosecutors, the public defenders, or the Department of Juvenile Justice, all of which is part of the law enforcement public safety. But we'll do that in the future. Anything else for the good of the order? Any other suggestions for the next meeting at all? All right, then at this point in time, the meeting is adjourned. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chair. Susan, do you have parking validation?
Yes. I don't know. We have to ask outside. I haven't gotten that call yet.
They got it. They got it for us.